It's a new year, and that means it's time for new episodes of Rise of the Rule Lords.
Happy 2024, and welcome back to Rise of the Rule Lords. It's me, your pompous and narcissistic Rule Lord Pete. And by God, was 2023 a year. Sure, the globe had its fair share of notable events, but in the TTRPG world, well, it might as well have been Earthfall. But with every crisis that befell us, Paizo came back, shining a light of hope like Sarenrae. When Wizards of the Coast tried to take away the open gaming license, Paizo collaborated with other independent gaming companies and gave us the open RPG creative license. When Wizards of the Coast embraced AI art, publishing it in one of their biggest releases of the year, Paizo came out staunchly in favor of real human artists. When Wizards sent the Pinkertons after someone for getting some magic cards a little bit early, Paizo and their employees came to an agreement with their union contract and officially ratified it in a historic event. And of course, as people are still wondering what one D&D is going to look like and how it's going to impact their games, we now have Core Pathfinder in our hands, completely free of everything D&D. In other words, it has been a good year to play Pathfinder and be a fan of Paizo in general. And 2024 is looking to be just as good. This year, Paizo is slated to complete the base of the remaster with the release of Player Core 2 and Monster Core, the one I, as a consummate GM, am most excited about. We're also getting a return to one of the most beloved locations in Paizo's first adventure path with Seven Dooms for Sandpoint. We'll also be getting our first look into Tian Xia outside of a classic adventure path in the Lost Omens World Guide, as well as a character guide written mostly by people with Asiatic or Pacific Islander heritage. We'll then be getting our first remaster rules adventure path, the Wardens of Wildwood, which will actually start at level 5, the first adventure path to do so. And that is going to lead up to the release of the book that I am personally most excited about, Howl of the Wild. Let me tell you why I am so excited about this book. Back in 2022, when Paizo had its last in-person convention post-COVID, which was also the first PaizoCon that I ever got to go to, I really thought that I was going to be writing more. Clearly, that hasn't happened. I mean, I have collaborated on a couple of projects, but haven't done a big thing for myself. But I had a really good idea. That idea was a look into the natural history of Galarian. And why is that? Well, part of it is because I have been a Jurassic Park fan for as long as I can remember. Now, if you've never read the books, you should. They're great. Michael Crichton has a little bit of an inflated ego, but you can get past that. But in The Lost World, there's a line that has always stuck with me when looking at the environments of different games, and that's regarding the sustainability of an ecosystem. Specifically, how it relates to predator-prey relationships. Now, we all know in basically any game, not just TTRPGs, but video games, even board games sometimes, there is a massive influx of things that are trying to eat you. In fact, it almost seems like the world is populated almost exclusively by things with sharp claws and gnashing teeth. The truth is, though, those creatures would only be able to survive if there was a massive influx of prey. And you're probably thinking, well, they just eat a bunch of people. Well, no. Usually it's when they start eating people that they send adventurers out and then that monster gets killed. Up to the point where they start eating people, they are probably living off of some other prey. And for some creatures to get as big as they are, it needs to be more than, like, deer or boar. And so I've been really intrigued to not just see more wildlife in Galarian, but to see more magical herbivores, to see more fantastical creatures that these more predator-like ones, like the Froghemoth, might prey after. And so I was convinced at PaizoCon that I was going to get to write this book. You know, it'd be a third-party publication on Pathfinder Infinite, but I was going to do it. And because PaizoCon was there and I'd be able to talk to all of these developers, I did. She's not at Paizo anymore, but I talked with my friend Liz Lydell about it. I talked to Mark Seifter, who also is not at Paizo, but is a genius when it comes to design. And I also talked to John Compton, who is at Paizo. And boy, let me tell you, he puts a lot of effort into the design of Galarian. Like, he was telling me how he even puts up like geographical maps and, you know, charts out like wind patterns based off of where the mountains are and where like the sea currents would go and stuff. Like, it's so cool. Like, I asked all of these people about like practices and like sources that I would look up, and basically came to the conclusion that there wasn't a whole lot about the natural history of Galarian. There were a couple of books where there was more in-depth information about creatures than just the bestiaries, and I went and got all of those books, and then I didn't go anywhere with it. But I did put out those vibes into the universe, and wouldn't you know it, 2 years later, we're getting a book covering just that, a natural historical look at Galarian. Now, will it have all of the things that I would have put in it, that I would love to see in it? I don't know, but it's going to have a lot of cool things, and it's going to be more than what we had before. And I'm not a superstitious fella, but people think that putting their dice in jail will fix their outcomes, so I'm going to go ahead with it. I think that maybe there was some part of just wishing for it helped make it a real thing. And so that's what this episode is about. It's me going a little bit off the cuff, asking, what if I ruined Paizo? And let me say why I phrase it that way. The other big thing in 2023 that impacted me personally was Elon Musk taking over Twitter. Now, I could go off on how he has ruined that platform and how much I miss what it used to be. But the essence is, this person came in with no earthly idea what he was doing, thought that he did know what was best, and did it. Told everyone, this is how it's going to go, and things have just gone downhill from there. And so when I ask myself, if I too had been born of an emerald baron in apartheid Africa and had been able to finagle my way into companies buying enough stock so that I could kick out the original creators, yes, the original creators of those companies, and then taking credit for them so that I could then become one of the richest human beings in all time. And then I decided to invest $44 billion into Paizo, which is, by all accounts, roughly 1,300 times more than the net worth of Paizo. What if I walked in there with a kitchen sink like a jackass and then started demanding certain things be done? What would those things be? And of course, this isn't what I, Pete, host of Rise of the Rule Lords, would actually do. Because if I, for some reason, became ultra wealthy enough to buy Paizo Incorporated and be able to do with it what I wanted, I would leave it alone. Because the folks at Paizo have one thing that I don't: spreadsheets. Paizo is extremely notable for paying close attention to their fan base, taking note of the things that they want, but also using data, especially from organized play and, of course, from their sales to be able to determine what it is that they should be developing. And after all, they are still a company. And while I very much think that the comrades at Paizo would very much like to make their game free for all to be able to play. And technically, they have. They are still a business and have to make businessy decisions. And I am under no delusion that the decisions that they make are the correct ones for the company. This is just my way of, once again, trying to put out the vibes into the universe of things that I would like to see from Paizo. And maybe, just maybe, the fates will be with me once again. So again, there's Pete, host of Rise of the Rule Lords, but now we're stepping into the shoes of Pete Musk, a horrible human being, who nevertheless loves TTRPGs, especially Pathfinder 2nd Edition, and has been playing it for a long time, and wants to see some things happen, thus has bought the company to make those things happen. So what does Pete Musk do when he kicks open Jim Butler's door, demanding change, and then finding out that Jim Butler probably works from home like most other people? Well, the first thing that he demands is a return to pawns. Yes, pawns rather than minis. Those cardboard cutouts of little pieces of bestiary art that are the best friends of GMs who still play at a table. Now I, Pete the Rule Lord, understand why these have gone away. And one of those reasons, I'm afraid, is probably the same one that the corporate overlord at Wizards of the Coast gave in that infamous call where they wanted to monetize D&D. The pawns are a product that almost exclusively GMs would buy, which is still a very small portion of the overall base of consumers. That means that you are creating a very expensive product that takes up a lot of shelf space, takes a lot of money to ship for not very many people to buy. So are they the most profitable venture? Probably not. But God, they are so nice to have. And look, I get it. Many people now play exclusively on a virtual tabletop, which is totally fine. There's so many cool things that you can do. There's so many new friends that you can play with because you can play all around the country. I've gotten to do that myself. But there is really, truly no substitute to be able to play at a table. But when you do play at a table, you need certain tools. And one of those tools is something physical to be able to put in front of your players. The pawns were a great tool to be able to do that. Why? Because they gave you a lot of monsters for a very, extremely reasonable price. A price that you could not get from any miniature set. In fact, arguably, one of the most useful products for a tabletop GM to be able to get was the Adventure Path specific pawn sets that Paizo sold, which gave you virtually every single creature that would turn up in an adventure path. I myself used the one for Fist of the Ruby Phoenix a lot when I was running that in person, which is why it's so sad to me that they stopped at Quest for the Frozen Flame, and we haven't gotten any since. And yet we've gotten books with a lot of cool creatures in them. Most notably, Book of the Dead and Rage of Elements, which are basically little bestiaries. But why do I think it would be a good opportunity to bring them back now? It's because of Monster Core. We already know that a lot of monsters are going away, including a lot of the classic dragons that we know, the chromatic ones, red, gold, silver, white, all of those gone. Many others are changing fundamentally, such as the Naga. Paizo previewed this recently, where the new Naga looks like this cool Aztec stone snake, whereas the previous Naga was like a snake with a human head. So we're going to be getting new monsters, we're going to get replacement monsters, and we're going to get reskinned monsters that we already know of. That's a lot of changes to the core set. These are changes that no pawn set has, and I should know because I have all of them. Well, all of the Pathfinder ones, that is. I'm still working on Starfinder. My guess is that we might get one of those card decks, and those are fine. They're mostly cool at the table to be able to pull up artwork, but by and large, I am using a computer to pull up Archives of Nethys or Pathfinder Nexus to look at an actual stat block, which is printed on the other side of these cards. Though I guess there are GMs who could totally run a monster from the other side of one of those bestiary cards. But a thing that you can't do with one of those bestiary cards is place them on a battle map. You can't really show scale compared to the minis that your players have. You can't intimidate them with the size or the placement when you bring it out from behind the GM screen. And I know that maybe sounds like a little thing compared to the cost benefit of making these things, but oh my god, as a player and as a GM, I can't emphasize enough the impact that pulling out those little pieces of cardboard have when you are playing a game. So I really hope, at the very least, we get a new pawn set for the Monster Core series. I would love it if they brought back the Adventure Path ones, maybe even new ones for the extra bestiaries that we have, such as the ones from the Lost Omens guides, or from Book of the Dead and Rage of Elements, and any other little bits and pieces of monsters that are out there that are publishable under the orc. But I don't know that we will. And that makes me sad. The second demand that Pete Musk makes is to make sure all Pathfinder digital components are available. Now, what does that mean? Well, not every adventure path has a nice, fancy, workable Foundry VTT module. Like, yes, there is that PDF import tool, but they still kind of suck. You don't get the mini art, some things that should be automated aren't, things that should be hidden aren't, maps aren't that great. I say this as a GM who is running what I think is probably one of Paizo's best adventure paths, Quest for the Frozen Flame. That is one that could really benefit from a Foundry VTT module, but it doesn't have one. And right now, it looks like it probably isn't ever going to get one. Now, again, Pete the Rule Lord knows that this isn't Paizo's fault, nor is it the Foundry VTT team who is making it. Paizo is not in charge of actually making the Foundry VTT modules, it's that team. But that team is also very small, and they are only able to handle so much. And Paizo keeps on making adventure paths. These guys don't get a break. So when would they actually have time to go back into the past and make these modules for older adventure paths? The simple truth is that they probably never will. Abomination Vaults was the only notable exception, as well as the Beginner Box, because those are such popular modules, both of which are extremely beautiful. But sadly, Quest for the Frozen Flame will probably never get to see that same level of beauty. Thankfully, they are making it for the new adventure paths, which, let's kind of also be honest, those are the ones players usually want to play once you finish an adventure path. A lot of people play multiple games at the same time, so it's very likely that those older campaigns that have already been published, they've already played. Maybe they didn't finish them, but they're not very likely to return either. So I get it, especially since all of those adventure paths that would need VTT modules are now also ones that are still under the OGL rather than the orc. And I can see Paizo just wanting to let them lie. But let me tell you, as someone who has GM both of these adventures, Fist of the Ruby Phoenix and Quest for the Frozen Flame are extremely fun, and they would be even better with a Foundry module. But again, sadly, we're probably not going to get that unless there is extreme demand for them. Demiplane is also missing a couple adventure paths from Pathfinder Nexus. I have more confidence that we're going to see those adventure paths eventually come to Pathfinder Nexus. But again, someone who is currently running Quest for the Frozen Flame, it is super annoying having to go to PDFs when I like Pathfinder Nexus so much more for being able to refer to materials. And I know Nexus isn't for everyone, but I stand by it. I love it. And it's what I'd prefer to use when referring to the adventure when I'm at my computer, especially because I am currently running it online. Again, that's largely outside of Paizo's control, because it's not Paizo who's adding those things to Demiplane, it's the Demiplane team. So how that would get accomplished, according to Pete Musk, I'm not sure. Maybe like a reworking of the contracts or throwing money at those people. I don't know. But it's also something that is either going to take more time, more money that Paizo probably doesn't have, or more demand. Third thing that Pete Musk would demand is completing the print-on-demand library. What is this? Well, some time ago, Paizo and DriveThruRPG announced that they are going to start doing print-on-demand for some out-of-print publications for first edition, and that is super cool. The problem is, the selection that they chose is weird and almost random. Now, of course, Paizo has had their hands full with the remaster and the orc, and both of those things pushed everything else that they were planning to do back by months, if not years. So why would I put prioritization on this particular project? To get rid of product. But you're making new product with print on demand. Yes, exactly. Pathfinder is more popular than ever. More and more people discovered it after the OGL fiasco. That means there are more people collecting. I happen to be one of those collectors. I like to collect Paizo things. There are many things I cannot collect. One of those big things is out-of-print adventure paths. They are expensive. Let me give you an example. Currently, Wrath of the Righteous is mostly sold out. Paizo does have a couple of the books still available to buy in print edition on their website, namely numbers 3, 4, and 5. Okay, that's fine. That means that we need to go to eBay or some other place to be able to find numbers 1, 2, and 6. Let's go to eBay. Let's find out how much those are going for. Book number 1, you can get for between $70 and $90. Now, as someone who does collecting, you know that that is not a terribly unreasonable price. It's way more than you should be paying for one of these things, but, you know, limited supply and all that. If you watch a lot of Pawn Stars, you'd understand. Number 2, Sword of Valor. You can get that between $40, $50. That's a little bit better, right? All right, so we're at $70, $40, and then like $11 currently for each of the other adventure paths on Paizo's website. So, you know, we're about at $150 for the first 5 books. Okay, that's more than I'd like to spend. More than, of course, if I had bought them when they originally came out, but I can't do that anymore because time is a flat circle and I can't go back in time. But I just need number 6, so let's see how that's going.
$258!
Okay, just kidding. That's only the first result. Really, they go for between $120 and $160. Okay, so can you see why I'm probably not going to complete the Wrath of the Righteous collection unless print-on-demand happens again? I would love to be able to complete full collections of these. And I'm not even saying Paizo needs to put every book on print on demand. I'm just saying the out of print ones, the ones that you can't get through their store. On DriveThruRPG, these print on demand copies are $25.99. That is a hella difference between what you can get on eBay. Now, if I'm the kind of collector who needs the original printed copy, sure, I'm still gonna go to eBay to get one of those real quote-unquote copies. But I'm the kind of collector who likes to have things on my shelf. I like to be able to grab a tactile version of a book if I'm gonna open it and read it, which means I just need to be able to buy a version of it. So if I could get the print-on-demand versions of 1, 2, and 6, of course, I'm going to get 3, 4, and 5 from Paizo's store. And I know that Paizo is trying to get rid of these old books. They have these first edition sales all the time, but I don't want to buy incomplete collections. I just don't, and I don't think many other people want to either. Now, I don't know how hard this is to do. After all, they have the PDF of it, the InDesign files probably, and DriveThruRPG does the actual printing. So I'm not actually sure what the holdup is between the two, why we haven't gotten many new titles since 2021. But the ones that we do have are kind of haphazard. So if it's based off of success of the program, I almost guarantee that's why it's not being very successful, especially because those print-on-demand copies are not linked from those pages on the Paizo store. And we all know Paizo's getting a new web store very soon. Oh my god, can't wait for that. But hopefully that's something that they start to do. Link to more of the external versions of that same version of whatever the product is. Not just the one that they're selling, but the VTT version of it, the demiplane version of it, and hopefully we'll see in the future the print-on-demand version of it. I think it'd help get rid of those old original, again, quote-unquote versions. I think it'd get Pathfinder into even more hands, and that means more dollar bills in Paizo's pocket. It just has to get done. Fourth demand from Pete Musk. Let's get those physical hero points back, shall we? Again, in the early days of Pathfinder 2nd Edition, usually there were three big products that were released in conjunction with an adventure path. The Pawn Set, big GM necessity. A dice set, which honestly, I think we could all live without. They weren't very good. And a hero point coin. Now these, they are so good. Campaign coins make some primo stuff. And I'm not just saying that because they sent me the Kingmaker coin that was previously only available through the Kickstarter that I unfortunately missed. Which, by the way, thank you Campaign Coins for that again. I say it because at the table, the idea of having a physical hero point to hand out to your players to turn in when you want to actually spend it is so cool. Even more, having a coin that you can get to commemorate the campaign that you're either about to begin or that you just finished that is specific to that campaign is so cool. However, those two stopped with Strength of Thousands, but I never saw any kind of official announcement like we did for the Pawn Sets. Now I know from following Campaign Coins that A, they had a very successful Kickstarter making Galarian specific coins, which I got one of the complete sets through that, and those are super cool. But I also know that currently they are in the process of moving and are trying to get rid of product. So maybe this is just a stall with the manufacturer. At least that's what I'm hoping. Because I would love to see these coins come back. The detail on them is just amazing, and even if you're an online-only player, there's something that you could send out to your players as like a gift. Makes a perfect gift for Christmases, birthdays, whatever, or just as a end of the campaign farewell. That's kind of one of the more minor of these three that I've listed, but I just really like them. I'd like to see them again. Before I get into Pete Musk's final demand, here's a couple of honorable mentions. One, remaster the stamina rule system. It's a really great system. I really like it. But it does need clarification about what happens with drained and massive damage. But that's pretty much it. I was really sad to not see it in the GM core book, and I'm hoping that we see it show up some other time. Two, make rounds be 10 seconds. I think this just makes more sense. With the three action economy, it's really hard for people to accomplish so much in 6 seconds, especially if you think about running. If you use all three actions to run 25 feet, if that's your movement speed, that's 75 feet. You theoretically can make it in 6 seconds if you're like really booking it, but also consider that people are going to be wearing like heavy armor and carrying a bunch of stuff. That's going to be really hard. 10 seconds helps thematically, but also mechanically, it makes minute-long effects be a little bit more attainable to actually end, both for players and against creatures. Obviously, this is super easy to homebrew, and I think I'm actually going to try it out in my next homebrew campaign. But if it was official, it could dramatically change the landscape of certain spells. Right now, minute-long spells are basically a life sentence for the duration of combat. with 6 seconds, it would take 10 rounds to get through a minute-long spell. And most combats don't last for 10 rounds unless they're, like, super intense. However, if it was 10 seconds, it would take 6 rounds. Now, combats generally still don't even go that long, but it's a much more feasible length even in a moderate encounter for a 6-round combat than a 10-round combat. The final honorable mention is, don't put the book art on Lost Omens guides all the way around on the book spine. Granted, I personally buy the Lost Omens special editions, so I don't have to look at that stuff anymore. But for people who buy the regular editions, I don't know, it just always looked gross. Especially when you put it next to all the other books that just have that nice tan spine. We don't really know what the remastered Lost Omens books are going to look like, if they're going to stay the same or if they're going to change with the remaster, like how the remaster now has this kind of white and green motif going instead of the red and gold that they did with the original core design. Maybe it'll stay the same, maybe it'll change, but right now, it just looks a little disconcerting when you have all the other Lost Omens books next to each other, and then you have these Lost Omens settings books that are all these jumbles of little bits of artwork that you can't really fully see, you can't really even read the words on them. It's just always rubbed me the wrong way. And Pete Musk's fifth and final and probably most important demand, an official character builder app. This is something that has been needed for so long, and we do have a lot of great alternatives. The most notable, of course, is Path Builder. Red Razors does a tremendous job. Path Builder is a tool that I would wager just about every player and GM has touched in some way. It is one of the most common recommendations that I've ever seen as far as resources for new players to go to. But the other unfortunate part about what Red Razors does is that he could stop at any time. He does this largely as a passion project from what I can tell, and recently, relatively, started to have a very light payment within Path Builder for like some very mild extras within the app. Like, folks, he's not getting rich off of this, which also means that if at any point he decided this isn't my bag anymore, we're out of an app for one of the most critical parts of playing this game, making a character. Path Builder is so notable because it comes in both app and now desktop form, even though Apple users are kind of out of luck as far as apps go. But there's also Wanderer's Guide. However, that's also just through a desktop version, though you can use a mobile desktop version. But again, Wanderer's Guide is the same thing. Quasar is also just a regular person doing this out of passion and some very light monetary gain. Neither of these creators are Paizo official and are in fact limited in some of the content that they can provide through these character creator apps because of that. The people that are likely closest to giving us a official app is Pathfinder Nexus through Demiplane. The beta of their character creator looks great and functions pretty well, but it still needs some tune-ups. But also, Demiplane isn't a app necessarily. It does work very well on mobile, and if you save it in that, you know, one way, it can kind of become like a little app. But it's not like an official app that you can get from one of those web stores and have it work. In fact, Paizo only has, at the moment, 2 official apps that I'm aware of. First is the Initiative Tracker, which was a very strange move. It works okay, I just don't understand why it exists. Second is Pathfinder Lore Masters, which is a super fun game. I am apparently very bad at lore, but I always get the rules part right. And I am hopeful that once Demiplane completes their character builder for Pathfinder, that they too will make it a official mobile app. I also hope that that mobile app will work on desktop just as Path Builder does currently. But there is one function that no matter what the character creator company is that makes this Paizo official character creator app needs to do. It needs to be able to be imported into Foundry. There is a module that will try to import a character from a PDF. There is also another app called PathMuncher that will try to import a character from PathBuilder into Foundry. The problem with both of those is A, neither of those are Paizo official, which again means could break at any time and everyone else is SOL. But secondly, they do not work from Foundry back into the app. Now I have no idea if this is technologically possible. I have not the foggiest idea what it would take to make that happen. But I do know this. Players need to be able to take their character out of Foundry into the world and be able to play around with them until the next session. It needs to be able to save hit points, should add any new equipment that they added, save conditions that they had on them, and then allow players to take that character sheet out of Foundry, go into the world, sit at a park bench or something, and go through their character options, make, you know, their level 4 to level 5 character, and then plug it back into Foundry with all of those things still intact. That might be asking way too much, because of course, Pete Musk is an incredibly unreasonable person, but I have watched enough of players and how they interact with the game on and offline, and they always need to be able to look at their character. One of the most frustrating things is needing to make character changes and they can't get into Foundry. Maybe because that's because the host is away. Maybe it's because the host is playing a different game. Either way, it locks a player out of their ability to interact with their character, and that kind of sucks. It's something pen and paper players never had to deal with, but we are now players of computer chips and cybernetics and ones and zeros. The times are changing and we need to change with them. And that is one of the changes that I would love to see. But at the very least, we need to have an official Paizo-sponsored app. We need to be able to rely on this app existing through the duration of the game. We need to know that it will always be supported with the new content as soon as it comes out. We need to be able to have access to options that are only available through Paizo licenses. And most importantly, we need to know that it will function within the rules of Pathfinder. That when you add a +1 to your weapon, it adds a +1 to the stats. That if there is some crazy ability that you can toggle on and off, that you can toggle that ability on and off. We're just never going to get that same level of support from a third-party option, no matter how good they are. And Red Razors and Quasar are extremely good at what they do, but they are limited by those licensing options. They get the content as soon as we get the content. Whereas an official licensed partner would get it well in advance so that everyone else could get it the same day as release. I think of all the demands that Pete Musk has made, this is probably the one closest to real fruition. But we'll see. We still don't have anything in our hands yet, and we haven't had any announcement of it coming so far. Now maybe you, clever listener, have noticed something that Pete Musk did not. Most of these issues are in fact not with Paizo at all. It's because Paizo knows what they're about. They make great books, they concoct great lore, and they write great adventures. What they don't do is software development, printing, or metallurgy. These they outsource to companies that they set up official partnerships with. And also, most of these issues with these partnerships don't have anything to do with the partnership itself. Rather, it becomes issues of the cost of development, the number of staff available at those companies, shipping, and of course, time. All of these things are precious resources, both to Paizo and those partnered companies. The reason I made those comparisons at the start of the podcast is not just because I want to throw shade at Wizards, even though I do always love throwing shade at Wizards. It's because Paizo is Wizards' biggest competitor, and they have nowhere near the same scale as Wizards does. I have oft seen the comparison made by both regular people and Paizo employees themselves, that comparing Wizards of the Coast to Paizo is like comparing Walmart to a mom-and-pop store. It's like comparing Panera Bread to a little bakery. Yes, Paizo makes a better product. I will die on that hill. They have better ethics, the quality of their materials is better, and their relationship with their consumers is unparalleled. But they are still quite small. Wizards has the kind of money to buy out its own VTT. They were able to produce a movie, a Game of the Year winning video game, and still their parent company Hasbro laid off so many of their employees, as well as their artist and Wizard of the Coast employees. It's like no matter what this company does, they can't fail. Paizo keeps on doing the right thing and can't seem to get the same leg up. Would these demands by Pete Musk make Paizo money? Yes, but would it be enough to offset the cost? I don't know. The thing is, Paizo also can't afford to fuck it up. Wizards of the Coast screws up, and who suffers? Their employees. You, the consumer, but not their management, not the movers and shakers, oh no, not them. Paizo has to keep moving forward. They have to go with what they know will work, and they also have to be laser focused, which means that even if there is something that could be really cool, really nice for us to have, they might not be able to do it. They might not have the money to be able to afford for someone else to do it. That's why I say, if they did do what Pete Musk told them to do, probably would ruin Paizo, unless, again, someone extremely wealthy was funneling money into Paizo to make these things happen. But that's not how the world works. It's not how capitalism works. So that's not what's going to happen. So then why do I say this? Why do I make this episode particularly? It's because of what I just said. Paizo goes with what they know will work. They listen to their consumers, they collect data, and they go forward. People have been wanting Starfinder 2nd Edition for a while, and guess what we're getting? Starfinder 2nd Edition. It's Starfinder, but with the Pathfinder 2E engine that we're already super familiar with and love. And maybe, just maybe, there was someone that day who was listening when a little boy at PaizoCon was talking about wanting a book about the natural history of Galarian. I'll never be able to prove that, but why I make this podcast is maybe some of these things jive with you too. Maybe you also really want the pawn sets. Maybe you also really miss the campaign coins. Maybe you also want VTTs of the older modules. If you do, you have to talk about it. You have to let Paizo know, because they have to know that there's a market for it. If it looks like it can be profitable enough, if it looks like it can be worth the time, the staff power to be able to do it, maybe those things will happen. Otherwise, we'll just need to be content with what they give us. And they give us a lot of good stuff. This is, again, in no way saying Paizo is doing a bad job. Again, they are doing worlds better than their competition. Like Pedro Pascal said that one time, life is good, but it could be better. So listeners, what are you most excited about for 2024 and Paizo's release schedule? What are you hoping that they'll announce for 2025 after Gen Con? Let me know on Blue Sky at rulelord2e.com, or you can go to my new, improved, and polished website at rulelord2e.com. There you can find all the information about the podcast, ways that you can support it, info about submitting community use policy voiceovers, and ways to contact me if you want. I love to hear from you all, and I love to collaborate with other creators. So hit me up. After this episode, I am really going to try my darndest to go back to a bi-weekly release schedule because of all the neat things the Paizo has released with the remastered version of Pathfinder Core. Starting with the Human Fighter. So make sure that you click subscribe on either Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your podcatcher is. And make sure to rate and review on all of those things because they really help me out because of the algorithm. But until that next session, don't let the rules rule you.